Hello and welcome back to the Rider Report podcast. I'm your host, as always, Mark Smith, and with us is our CFL insider, Matt Sheridan. And Matt, let's talk about the big game that happened last week. It was a first place showdown in the CFL's West Division, the Saskatchewan Roughriders against the Calgary Stampeders, and Saskatchewan just couldn't get the job done in Calgary, falling to the Stampeders. The Riders struggled early in the game, were really chasing for the rest of the night, and that kind of was their the end of them. It just seemed like they could never overcome that slow start that they had. How tough is that to do against a team like Calgary that, you know, has that veteran experience and knows how to win those big games?
It was a close game, and chasing is always tough. You know, as much as people say breaking trail or being at the top can be tough, it's even tougher trying to, you know, gain some ground, especially against a team like Calgary with a quarterback like Bo Levi Mitchell, who is so good at what he does, which is managing games. And yes, Bo Levi Mitchell makes mistakes. He takes shots. There's a reason that he's got a pistol tattooed on his right bicep. He is a gunslinger from Katy, Texas. And he lived by that. And, you know, like, he scrambled and threw that pass across the field. Like, that was, you know, something a young and experienced high school quarterback will do. But he takes shots. And in the CFL, with a team like his, that gets the job done. And I can tell you from personal experience how discouraging it is to be in the position that Saskatchewan was, where everything is close. Honestly, when you look at the box score, Mark, defensively, the statistics are identical. Total number of tackles, the breakdown of it, all that kind of stuff. Even the offensive statistics, the punt to kickoff ratio, the yardage, the time of possession. You know, the only shortcoming I can see is that Cody Fajardo was the leading rusher for Saskatchewan. If we had been able to get a little bit more of a multi-dimensional offensive attack, that might have had an impact. But Calgary is so tough. Even when they play mediocre or make mistakes, they still know how to win. And that is a valuable commodity at this time in the season.
Yeah, it seems like they find, like you said, when they're not at their best, but they also find a way to make the opposition make that one mistake that's going to cost them and allow Calgary to, you know, get that momentum or get that win.
Absolutely. There's a psychological component to the game at every time. But as you get to this stage of the season, we got 3 weeks left. Knowing that you're playing well, as Saskatchewan was, but still you can't catch up and get ahead, that's a subtle but vital element of the competition that ramps up into the playoffs. You know, and I think that's one of those intangible benefits that the Stampeders has.
For sure. Let's move over to the other team that's in the race for first place in the West Division, the Winnipeg Blue Bombers. They're back in a three-way tie with the Riders and Stamps for first place. I understand by your reaction there. I am interested to hear what you have to think about the Bombers. They had a big day from Andrew Harrison, their win last week. Is that going to be their key moving forward? We know Strevler isn't the most consistent and solid quarterback, but is that what they're going to need to do to win down the stretch, is just feed Andrew Harris the ball in those big playoff games?
Well, that's, I think, one answer to it. And, I mean, thank Chibas for Andrew Harris. I'm going to wear an Andrew Harris jersey with a picture of George Costanza on it for Festivus this year. he's become the pulse of that offense. And as much as that's a great thing, because Andrew Harris is the epitome of consistency and versatility, but if and when he's not available or not performing, that doesn't leave a whole lot of options. And I know I've been tough on Strebler, and rightly so. I mean, his performance over the last number of weeks, let alone this whole season, has demonstrated that he is not a CFL caliber quarterback. He cannot pass the ball with the consistency necessary to be a successful starting quarterback in this league. He has flashes of brilliance, and it looks like he's been working on his mechanics. What is happening in that quarterback room in Winnipeg? Buck Pierce, by all accounts, is a great coach. And for the mechanics of Streveler's throw to still be where they're at, if they're firing Brian Chu in Vancouver because the offensive line can't perform, why is Buck Pierce's job safe in Winnipeg? Because he's got a quarterback who cannot throw the football any better than the high school kids that are playing down the street from Winnipeg Stadium.
Do you think I know Zach Claro's got some live reps this week in practice. Do you think he's an option down the stretch and maybe into the playoffs?
He might be. It's a question of, at this stage, balancing out knowledge and familiarity of the offensive system and the ability to execute it. And the saving grace for a guy like Chris Streveler is having, number one, a coach like Paul LaPolice, who has the, and I can't believe I'm going to say his name with this word in the same breath, he has the humility or perhaps the wisdom or experience to understand that he can't put his quarterback in a position to be unsuccessful. So, you know, Andrew Harris, you're right. He had a great day. It was uncharacteristic, actually, because he only had rushing statistics. And why were they statistics? 24 carries for 166 yards and one major. 24 carries. I didn't look it up, but I don't remember the last time any running back in the CFL got handed the rock 24 times. And it's not just Andrew. I would imagine we're going to see Nick Dembski and Johnny Augustine potentially get more involved and try and find, some personnel packages and some plays and some little wrinkles that are going to help them, especially considering they're playing Calgary twice in the next 2 weeks. And when it comes to Winnipeg's success, I think it's vital to remember that this being the CFL and there only being three downs, the relative importance of special teams, Justin Medlock is a pro. And it was made a big deal of in the Saskatchewan game because Winnipeg's long snapper, Chad Rempel, got hurt. And there's a rule that says that you're not supposed to contact the long snapper. So who they've got in there now is a graduate of University of Manitoba, Thomas Miles, a local kid, played in Winnipeg in high school at Churchill. He's doing the short and deep snapping, but he's not as consistent. But even with some of those snafus, Medlock is still automatic. And, he's making a huge contribution to Winnipeg's success. He was 4 for 4 with hitting the longest of 46 yards last week.
Is there any concern about Vernon Adams and the four picks he threw in that game and just the way Montreal's kind of been up and down? I know they've clinched a playoff spot and all that, but they have their ups and downs all season.
Absolutely. You've got to be concerned about that. He's not making good decisions. You know, anytime your completion percentage is under 60, he's at 59 for last game, but four interceptions to go along with the three fumbles and the one loss of downs. That's seven turnovers. That's you can't be successful at this point in the season when you're not taking advantage of those opportunities and turning the ball over that many times. That's going to be a major concern for Montreal moving forward.
Let's talk about the West again. How do you see that top three shaking out? We've talked about this a few times throughout the year, but there's a few weeks to go. How do you see the top three in the West shaking out by the end of the season? We have all three teams tied with 20 points right now. Calgary and Saskatchewan are 10-5. Winnipeg's 10-6. What do you see playing out here down the stretch?
Well, I don't see Calgary moving. And as much as I would like to think that Logan Kilgore and Edmonton can spoil Saskatchewan with their back-to-back games to round out the regular season, I don't think that's going to happen. So I see it kind of sticking almost exactly the way it is. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, Calgary, Saskatchewan, Winnipeg, Edmonton, BC. And that's that. I don't think we're going to see a lot of movement. Calgary's playing Winnipeg twice and then BC for the final week. Saskatchewan's got BC and then Edmonton twice. Winnipeg's got Calgary twice and then a bye. And then Edmonton's got a bye this week and plays Saskatchewan twice. And BC doesn't really matter at this point.
Yeah. That's kind of how I see it too. I think Saskatchewan needed to win last week if they wanted to have that shot at first place, with Calgary getting the two games against Winnipeg and then playing BC to finish off the season. I know the Riders play BC this week and have Edmonton over the last two, so if they can somehow go 3-0 and then have Winnipeg pick up a win against Calgary, that might save them. But I think Calgary holds on to that top spot and gets the West final at their place.
I think that Calgary's just hitting their stride now. They know exactly what they got to do, and they look good. They look crisp. Everything looks like it's happening the way it's supposed to be happening for them. They're playing clean football, so they are the odds-on favorite in my mind.
Agreed. Mike Riley goes down with a broken wrist in the BC Lions game against against the Edmonton Eskimos last week, the loss 19-6. Is that just another kind of blow in the tough season for the Lions and Mike Riley in his first year in BC?
It's really kind of a sad subtext to this whole season. There was so much hoopla and so much drama surrounding Mike signing in BC in February. Setting records, biggest contract ever for a quarterback, and rightly so, given his pedigree and what he'd accomplished in Edmonton. This is just sad. Riley has been the glue for that team through this semi-dysfunctional rookie season of their overhaul, with Hervey coming in and Clay Brooks and new coaching staff and, firing their O-line coach 5 weeks into the season and, flashes of competency and the DU doing well. They had a significant improvement lately. They were able to find their groove, but just too little too late. And now, of course, the question is, is anybody going to make any knee-jerk reactions in the off season, or is everybody just going to kind of play it cool and say, okay, we found something at the end of the season. Let's see what we can do in year number two.
Yeah, it's been a disappointing year. Like you said, there was so much just hype around the big signing and what maybe he could do in BC, and if he was worth the money that he was getting, but they just never seemed to have the talent around him to really give Riley the chance to have the success that maybe they had hoped that he would have.
And of course, Danny O'Brien, it's funny, there's a distinct Irish tinge to that quarterback room, isn't there? Riley and O'Brien.
That's and then you have Lule, who's got the red hair to go along with it.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Dublin West over there at the BC Lions practice facility in Surrey. They have so much talent on that roster. Big name guys. Daron Carter, Brian Burnham. They've got lots and lots of talent. And it just goes to show you, sometimes for whatever reason, you've got all of these star athletes and they can't come together to be successful at a team sport, and it's frustrating for them. I can't imagine.
Agreed. You touched a bit on this earlier. Edmonton's going to be the crossover team. Do you think they can play spoiler at all for the Riders in the last 2 weeks of the season?
I'm sure they wish they can, but as long as Logan Kilgore keeps only completing 18 passes for less than 200 yards and no major scores, then there's not much that I think they're going to be able to do. Kilgore's shown a tremendous learning curve and a trajectory over the last 2 months. He's definitely looking confident and comfortable. The O-line is playing well. There's occasional flashes of playmaking from Ellingson and some of the other guys, but it's not consistent enough at this point in the season to be able to really be competitive. And that game was really strange. At this point in the season, you don't expect a team like Edmonton, who's doing all right, to have 14 penalties for 170 yards. That's significant. You know, that's only 24 yards less than the yardage your quarterback produced.
Yeah.
It's more than half of the total yards of offensive production, and you're leaving that out there on the field through penalties and mistakes, which we should not be seeing at this point in the season.
No, I agree. I think it's going to be tough for them, but I'm sure they'll give it a shot against the Riders. And Edmonton obviously wants to be hitting a high note going into the playoffs when they head to Montreal in November 10th for that Eastern semifinal as the crossover team.
Well, Edmonton's scary. You've got to respect them. That defense has been stout all year long, and they really demonstrated last week against BC that when they smell a little blood in the water, they're not scared to put their foot on the gas and go for it. And if they can produce some turnovers and they get a little bit of luck and get some points off of that, anything can happen.
No, agreed. Let's look at picks. Let's go to week 19 in the CFL. It starts with a East Division battle, Toronto in Montreal. Do the Alouettes bounce back in this one against the woeful Argonauts in this one?
You know what? Just the very fact of you saying that is making me change my mind to say yes. I am going to believe in Kahari. Believe in Kahari. That's all you got to do. Because I watched that Toronto-Ottawa game, the highlights, and oh my God, you want to talk about a couple of teams that are checked out.
I was going to say, there was highlights to that game?
Just, so one of the things that you can use as a benchmark for the enthusiasm and the effort that players are giving, like where they're at in their head, is watch on field goals. Watch how hard the guys who are rushing the kick, how hard do they try? That is the ultimate test of just how much spirit and effort a team has. And to a man, I saw Toronto just stand up out of their stance and not provide any kind of enthusiasm whatsoever. So even though McLeod Bethel Thompson is looking halfway decent, he's making some good decisions, he's accurate, and they got a decent performance out of Wilder Jr. with 15 touches. S.J. Green hit the 10,000-yard mark for his career. Some good things going on in Toronto, but Montreal is going to turn around. And after 7 turnovers, I'm not too sure I want to be in that film session with Kahari. It takes quite a bit to get him upset, but I would imagine that would do it. So I think Montreal is going to put their foot down and hold it at home and give it to Toronto. It's going to be a big game, I think, for Montreal. They're going to real push here, and they're going to just shut Toronto down.
Yeah, I agree with you across the board on that one. Montreal, they tickets went pre-sale for their playoff game, and they almost sold out of the game immediately. So I think football's back in Montreal right now.
Let's put a little bit of perspective on this, though. So Molson Stadium at McGill University only holds about 22,000 people.
Yeah. Oh,
and
I agree.
From what I understand, there's like 15,000 season ticket holders. So selling out a playoff game, which is awesome, and I applaud the accomplishment, but when you only have to sell 7,000 tickets in a town the size of Montreal, pales a little bit relative to what it would take to sell out, say, dare I say, in Toronto, where a third of our national population lives, yet the posted attendance for last week's game against Ottawa was 10,368.
In a stadium that holds 25,000.
Yes.
Not good.
No. No, it really, really isn't. So Montreal, the football may be back there, but I don't think it's back in Toronto.
No, it definitely isn't. Let's move to the West Coast, the doubleheader on Friday. Saskatchewan heading into BC. BC obviously without Mike Riley for this one. Riders looking to bounce back from that loss to Calgary. How do you see this one playing out in BC?
Well, depends on what BC is going to do at quarterback now, doesn't it? Correct me if I'm wrong, but they signed Brandon Bridge, did they not?
Yep. But I think O'Brien's playing, isn't he?
Yeah, I think so too. This is the kind of scenario where sometimes you're playing for jobs. I remember hearing Milt say this a couple of weeks back where, you know, now there's guys that are playing for jobs. So I don't think it's even going to be a question. Saskatchewan's going to win this handily, but I just hope that nobody there is looking past BC because that's the reason they play the game.
Yeah, I think the Riders pull it out despite maybe a BC push to try to play spoiler, but I think the Riders go in and get the job done as they look to get a home playoff game for themselves this season. Saturday, we got two more games on the schedule, Ottawa in Hamilton to start things off on Saturday afternoon. First place against last place. What's your thoughts on this one, Matt?
No question here. This is Hamilton all the way. Ottawa, unfortunately, is not really looking all that great. So I really don't know what to say here. This is as much disparity, I think, as you get in the CFL this year. So definitely going with the Tiger Cats.
Yeah, I agree. The Red Blacks have been that team that's just kind of nosedived. As bad as Toronto has kind of consistently been bad all season, Ottawa's just taken that steep, steep drop as the year's gone on. So I am with you on Hamilton taking the win in this one. And the final game of the week is a big one in the West Division. It has the Winnipeg Blue Bombers heading to Calgary to take on the Stampeders. Calgary coming off the win over Saskatchewan. Winnipeg picked up the win over Montreal last week. How do you see these two teams finishing up?
This is Calgary's to lose. You know, last week against Montreal, Winnipeg allowed Montreal to be competitive in the first half, and they fought through to the end. But you can't be at this point in the season and consider yourself a championship caliber team if you only beat a team by 11 points and they had 7 turnovers.
Yeah.
You're trying to tell me they had 7 turnovers and the point differential was only 11 points? No, I don't think that's going to cut it. You can't call yourself a championship team. So I hope that they didn't get their britches too big, and I hope they understand the challenges that they're facing the next 2 weeks, because Calgary's looking to add to their legacy right here.
Yeah, I think Winnipeg has a chance next week in Winnipeg, but I don't think they have it this week against the Stampeders. So I'm with you on this one. I'm going with the Stampeders. So we're no difference. I think it's pretty easy to pick this week's games. We got Montreal, Saskatchewan, Hamilton, and Calgary all the win this week for me and Matt.
That's right. And if we go back and we take out last week, we didn't get a opportunity. So standing here, as of 2 weeks ago, you're up by 3 games on me. I'm 47-13, and you're 50-10 for all of our broadcast picks so far this year.
I really should have been, you know, putting money on all these games throughout the season, because 50-10 is a pretty good record.
Yeah. Sports Select might have to be a necessary auxiliary component to our podcast next season, Martin.
I agree. All right. That does it for this week's podcast. Our picks for week 19 again. Matt and me have Montreal over Toronto, Saskatchewan over BC, Hamilton over Ottawa, and Calgary over Winnipeg. So if you are playing Sports Select, go put those down. You might make some money, unlike me and Matt, who have been neglecting that all season. But yes, thanks again for everyone for tuning in. Thanks for sitting down with us, Matt.
Thanks for having me.
You can find the podcast always on iTunes.